This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
66979 ESPN, 206-421 ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. So the Mariners get a 3-1 victory over the Chicago White Sox last night. Wade LeBlanc going 7 1/3 innings, striking out 10. Remarkable that he was able to do that. And then, of course, the bullpen came through with Alex Colome in the 8th and Edwin Diaz getting his 37th save. That, of course, gives the Mariners now a 4-game lead over Oakland because Oakland lost to San Francisco 5-1. The Angels ended up losing to the Houston Astros 3-1, so they're 10 games back. So a little bit of ground right now. Series continues with Felix Hernandez on the mound going against the White Sox tonight. Chance to try to wrap up and get an edge in this series, 2-0. Of course, this is a series where they need to win at least 2 and more likely 3. We'll see how they do there. Scott Servais gets his contract extension, which is everybody anticipated, but now it's done, well-deserved. And so the coaching staff's in good shape. The team now has continuity. Now what it's got to continue to do is see if it can make a rush to make the playoffs. In Los Angeles, it does look like Shohei Ohtani may be allowed to start to pitch again. No timetable when he's going to be back, but at least he's cleared to start doing some throwing. You know he's already been doing the hitting. In football, Dante Fowler gets a 1-game suspension for Jacksonville for an incident that he had last year where he got into an assault and he threw somebody's cell phone and some stuff in the water and all that. So he gets a 1-game suspension for that. D'Ar Stewart, the wide receiver for the New York Jets, he gets a 2-game suspension, 2-game suspension for PEDs, and those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Joining us right now is Dave Grosby. And Dave, how are you on this nice, sunny Saturday?
Doing great, John. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well, doing well. Well, I mean, again, I know we talked about Scott Servais yesterday, but, it was important for him and the team to kind of take on a team like the White Sox just to get some confidence back and get that win. And so 3-1 win. But one of the things I was kind of intrigued with in the press conference, he talked about, and they pointed out how good he is in two-run games, a ridiculously good record. You know how good this year he is in one-run games. This guy can manage.
That's their determination, and that's why he got the contract extension. And I think the telling stat on this was produced by our colleague Curtis Rogers. This is the first time the Mariners have extended a Mariners contract since Lou Piniella 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it goes to show what a disaster it's been just in trying to find some continuity and some consistency, which is always the way to be successful in pro sports, is to have that. And they have not had that in the managerial office for going on almost 2 decades now, and now they're in a position to have it a little bit with Scott Servais. So that really jumped out at me that it had been that long since they'd extended a manager. That's just unbelievable. So good news for the Mariners, good news for Servais, and a good win last night against a terrible White Sox team.
Yeah, they are awful. It's like, and that's why you feel so fortunate about having Jerry DePoto here, because I know that there's still age in the team. Felix is getting older and is not the king as he was, and you've got Cano, you've got Cruz, and Seager is getting a little bit older, but the influx of good young talent that's going to be under contract at reasonable prices for 2021 as maybe as long as 2023, it gives them a chance to stay competitive as long as these contracts go for DePoto and for Scott Servais.
Well, right. Gives them a chance to actually establish an organization. I mean, they had done that with GMs. They hadn't been as quick on the trigger finger, and probably in the minds of many, waited too long on Bill Bavese and waited too long on Jack Cerenzik. But, you've got to have some consistency in there to have a guy at least expound his philosophy and then have a few drafts to come up with his philosophy. I think from the Mariners' standpoint, what their issue is in building a farm system now is player development more than anything else. I mean, that's what it feels like has been lacking. And you've seen some young players go off, Chris Taylor most notably, and be exceptional in other organizations. So I think that's a big part of what they got to do now is, eventually you can't get good just by freewheeling and trying to trade every year and trade your way into it. You've got to build up a minor league system that produces players. We both talked about Arizona the other day, where Arizona's been able to withstand the loss of J.D. Martinez in free agency, withstand a terrible trade of Mitch Haniger and Gene Segura, and still be able to battle for first place this year and be in the postseason last year. And that's having a good organization. So I understand the direction the Mariners had to go in. I mean, step one when you've got the longest drought in Major League Baseball, or you got the longest drought in professional sports and being in the postseason, that's job one. It doesn't matter what's happening in the farm system. You've got to get to the postseason. They're in position, obviously, to do that now, so now it's time for step two, which has been ongoing as they've been moving forward, but time to really focus on building an organization that produces prospects that can actually play at the major league level. And that's the way of guaranteeing good success and guaranteeing, as the Diamondbacks have shown, among other teams, the ability to withstand a bad trade or so and still be good. Right now, the Mariners are operating on a fairly thin basis. I mean, they don't have a lot of depth in any aspect of their organization at the upper levels. So that can only be built. That can't be traded unless you're giving up on a season and trading your veterans for pieces in the farm system. So they got to get that through the draft, and that's the next order of business. But they do have some consistency in their approach moving forward, which is usually a positive.
What things do you like most about Scott Servais?
He didn't panic. I would think that's probably the thing that jumps out the most to me is that he stays very level-headed. You know, the thing about being a baseball manager, and there's no absolute book on it, but, you know, it's the sport where you're together the most. You spend the most time in the locker room together. You spend the most downtime together. The season is by far the longest. So, I mean, you can't, although there have been exceptions to the rule. Lou Piniella in particular jumps out. You really don't want a guy who's going from too high to too low. You need someone who can maintain and someone who's got the respect of their players. And creating an environment, whatever that environment is, to be successful. And the service has gotten veterans and rookies to buy into his approach. Bob and I were talking about it yesterday. You know, we kind of rolled our eyes at first when he implemented some of the things that he did in terms of getting to know guys and things like that. But he got veterans to buy in. So that's definitely a skill of his, is to get veterans to buy into his program. And young guys tend to buy in anyway just by virtue of being young. So he seems to really have that down, and that's the most impressive characteristic. Baseball sorts itself out ultimately. I mean, a manager can have, especially in the American League, can have a minimal difference on games themselves. Calling relief pitching is basically what you can do. Otherwise, it's up to the players to come through, and there's not a lot of double shifting and things like that has to happen in the National League. So it's much more about maintaining a winning attitude, whatever that is. And it's no one thing, but he seems to have done it very well so far for the Mariners.
No question. And I would have to think the next extension has to be Nelson Cruz. That one, I think, has to get done.
I'm not so sure about that. That's going to be an off-season question for the Mariners. And I don't know that it depends on the rest of this year or not. But look, they've got a logjam right now, and we're going to see it in August when they bring Robinson Cano back. Cano's got 5 years left on his contract for a ton of money. He's basically untradeable. Unless you're going to move D. Gordon back to center field, you're going to be getting a center fielder in the offseason. And D. Gordon's going to be your second baseman, and that leaves Robinson Cano as a man without a position. And you got to have that left-handed bat in the lineup. And look, in Ryan Healy, you got a player with a lot of player control, a lot of contract control, and a guy who's on pace to hit about 30 home runs this year. It in some ways may leave Nelson Cruz as the odd man out, which seems impossible to conceive at this point, but that may be the situation. So I don't think I don't think you'll see Cruz's situation resolved until the off season. And it may depend a little bit on what happens here down the stretch. It may depend on what Robinson's going to look. They're saying when he comes back, he's going to play some at first base. We'll see what he looks like there. We'll see what he looks like as a DH. But they got an interesting decision to make there, because they've got a couple of players that play in the same position, and really one too many, and it's a veteran. So I hate the idea of seeing Nelson Cruz go anywhere because of how good he has been. But I think that's one they got to wait on. I don't think that's one you're going to see happen before the year is over.
Yeah, but I think I kind of look at him in the same way as an Adrian Beltre in Texas, and the same thing for a David Ortiz in Boston. And I know both those guys got 2-year deals, at almost the same age as Cruz, maybe 1 year later or 1 year earlier. But again, I think that he's such a good leader, and I think it's almost worth the gamble.
Well, I don't know how much of a gamble it is. It's just, do you have a position for him? I mean, who are you going to let go in that circumstance? That's why I think second half of the year will kind of determine that a little bit, or the last third of the year will kind of determine that a little bit. But he has done everything that you've asked for him to do. He's exactly what you said, is a great leader, has hit the ball, had his best years of his career here. So I would think that that at the end of the day that would make the most sense. But we'll see. We'll see, because it's, you know, they had a spot for David Ortiz. He was the DH. They have a spot for Adrian Beltre. He can still play third base. Nelson Cruz is the DH, but, you know, unless you're going to move D. Gordon back to center field, you got to, we got a Robinson Cano problem. And he's making more money, and he's, you know, his bat is as important as Cruz's is. So it's the kind of situation you want to be in, having too many good players. But it's definitely going to be one that they're going to have to deal with. I just think they'll wait for the offseason.
Yeah, but that'll be kind of the fun thing to see where they go with that. But a very important decision that they have to make. I thought the key of last night's game was D. Gordon going 4-for-4, because, you know, he had been kind of in a slump, probably because of that foot injury that he has, maybe other reasons. But, you know, getting him on base and getting that average up to 290, I thought was real important.
Well, I'm not sure about the average part of it, but 4-for-4 was what won the game. I mean, this is how the game's going to be won until you manage to work Cano back in the lineup. You don't score a lot of runs, so you've got several ways you can score runs if you're the Mariners. One way is the way we just saw last night with D. Gordon setting the table, you know, having a good night, being aggressive, being on base a whole lot, with a 330 hitter batting behind him, that's going to produce a couple of runs, and it helped produce enough runs to win the game in this case. You're going to have other games where you're going to need, I call it a Ryan Healy game, the game that he had last week, where they scored 6 runs and he had 5 RBIs. You've got guys like Cruz, like Seager, like Healy, who are capable of winning that way, because you're very rarely going to have a circumstance where you got all 9 guys hitting, and the Mariners are offensively challenged a little bit at this point. So it's going to be a variety of different ways, and the thing that D. Gordon gives the Mariners that don't, most teams don't have, is that igniter, is a guy who can create havoc on the bases, who influences how other guys get pitched behind him, by the way, to have him on base, even though he doesn't walk a whole lot in most cases. So that's definitely one of the more effective ways for the Mariners to win, and Gordon has been more of that than less of that this year. He's been a tremendous free agent pickup for the Mariners.
No doubt, and of course he's an all-star second baseman. Didn't get in the all-star game. I was kind of intrigued by the one story that came out yesterday involving Gene Segura and Nelson Cruz. It turns out that, I guess, hoping that Segura was going to get a home run in the all-star game, Nelson Cruz had 2 scheduled at bats and elected to give them to Gene Segura.
I didn't see that story, John. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I mean, this shows you the camaraderie and the teammates, how good they are. And that's why when you saw the video of Nelson on the celebration, because he was just going wild because he was trying to take a picture of that, thinking that Segura was going to hit a home run. And sure enough, he hits a 3-run homer. But what a great teammate Nelson Cruz is.
No, there's no question about that. He's done everything you could have possibly wanted him to do since he's come here, and in every aspect of the game, and now the only question is, the only thing to do is to finish it off, is to end the postseason drought, and, you know, you spend the rest of the year scoreboard watching, so you saw that the Angels lost last night to the Astros, you saw that the A's were beaten last night by San Francisco, and they got to face Madison Bumgarner today, they're already 4 back, you got a chance to put them 5 back if you can beat the White Sox, and remember, you control your destiny for the rest of this stretch. You've got 19 of your remaining 64 games are against the A's and the Astros. So in terms of moving forward, trying to catch Houston, which is still a possibility, but more importantly, fending off the A's, you're going to have a chance to do that yourself with all those games left. And you've already won 6 out of 9 against the A's this year. So that's the unique thing about this wild card race, is there's really only 1-2 teams in it. I mean, I don't consider the Angels, unless they're about to go on some kind of insane run, I just don't think they've got the wherewithal to get there this year. I think it's a 2-team race the rest of the way, and the Mariners now lead by 4 games, which is a fairly comfortable margin. Like I said, with 10 left against Oakland, they get a chance to truly control their own destiny going down the stretch.
No question about it. You watching the British Open?
Absolutely. It was a lot of fun to watch today. Tiger, whenever Tiger Woods does something exceptional, it gets the entire golf world excited. Now, he shot a 66 today, and they're having record scores posted at the Carnoustie Golf Course, so we'll see how far back he is by the time his third round is over. My guess is he's going to be about 5 shots back going into the final round. But if they have another dry day, a links course is the great equalizer. It's the opportunity for guys, even veterans. I mean, Bernhard Langer was 60 years old, made the cut Phil Mickelson is back in the mix in that one. You've got all the other young, a lot of the young bucks are there as well, including Jordan Spieth, who played very well. But, you know, that course is more about shot making than anything else. And Woods is a veteran at that. So, if he can stay within five shots of the lead, he's got a chance with a huge final round. But that's been the problem for him, is he's been putting four rounds together. We'll see if he can do it. But he is guaranteed that the one thing that a lot of people are going to be waking up early on Sunday morning and watching golf, whenever he's on the leaderboard, that is still the case.
Oh, that's great. And it is kind of fun to watch it. And obviously, the weather conditions always kind of change. I mean, what you see in the mornings, yep, a lot of times you don't see in the afternoon.
Or the next day. I mean, all they need, I mean, it was very windy and cold. And actually, I you know, it's a really good point. They showed a stat when Tiger was putting an approach shot in a 17 that earlier in the day, the wind was with the players, blowing about 10 miles an hour behind their back. And now 5 hours later is blowing 15 miles an hour left to right. So conditions do change during the course of the round. And Tiger can hope that it changes enough so the afternoon guys, who I think the leader right now is about 8 under par, doesn't get much further away from him than that. But he's definitely got him. He's played himself into a legit opportunity to win his 15th major, which he's been sitting on 14 for an awfully long time. And ironically, his original golf coach, Hank Haney, picked him to win before the week started. So this is the sort of course that he could do really well on. And so far he is.
So what's on the garage schedule today?
Going to go see Sheryl Crow tonight at the Chateau San Michel Winery. So really looking forward to that, as a matter of fact.
That'll be nice. Okay. And Dave, thank you for joining us. Talk to you on Monday. And, of course, that's Bob Gros and Tom, Dave Grosby. And, of course, weekdays 12 to 3 here on 710 ESPN Seattle. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Load up those phone lines at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, and that's going back to the Seahawks. I still look at the last year's team, because you've got a preview of coming attractions. And certainly it's not as great as the old run, which the team had from in 2013, 2014, you know, into 2015, because all the, you know, so many great players are gone. But it's still not as drastic as everybody has, because, I mean, you know what it looks like, at least with Shaquille Griffin and with Byron Maxwell out there. There's going to be a few more completions, but it was 61.3 completions, percentage on the completions. The run stopping has to get better. That's for sure. They've got the, but I still think that you know, the drop off, and there is a drop off. There's no question, because I mean, taking away a Michael Bennett, taking away a good defensive tackle in Sheldon Richardson, that's going to have an impact if Earl Thomas is there. But I tell you the one thing, and again, I want to get your thoughts on that. I mean, do you think the drop off is going to be very drastic, 4-12 drastic? Or is it just going to be, you know, pretty much close to the same record as it was last year? Because, I mean, you do see some improvement on different things. Last year, there was no running game. This year, with the offensive line change blocking, and I think the commitment to the running the football, they have a chance to do that. And if they do that, now remember, for 2 years, they had less than 410 carries per season, and you need about 450 to 500 to be good. And so consequently, you know, you're not getting the full advantage of the running game, and you're trailing at the end of three quarters. That's what you don't want to do. But if you can come back and then get the running game going, all of a sudden that point differential, which has been plus 14 and plus 34 in the last 2 years, starts to go up, and you win more games than you lose. And that makes it easier on the defense. I mean, because what ended up happening is they would squander away with bad offense for three quarters, and then Russell Wilson had to scramble to do everything in the fourth quarter. They've got to get through that. They've got to do better with the run game and the offense in the first three quarters, and not put the defense in such a bad spot, not put Russell Wilson in such a bad spot, and I think they can do that. I mean, do I look at a Super Bowl team right now? No, but I look like a team that still can compete for the playoffs. So give us your thoughts at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Yeah, I just think people are kind of jumping off the ledge a little bit when they have drastic drop-offs in this team. You know, I went through the quarterbacks that have been the real good ones through the years. I mean, since 2000. And yeah, there are exceptions. I mean, you know, you do pay a little bit of a price once you start paying the quarterback. I mean, Matt Ryan ran out of talent for 2 years, had a 4-12 and 6-10 season. I mean, Drew Brees played for 3 years at 7-9, even though he was playing at a Pro Bowl level, but the defense was giving up 26 to 29 points a game. You can't overcompensate that. And so, you know, the top quarterbacks, when they're top quarterbacks, usually don't go worse than 8-8, unless there's some horrible thing that happens as far as injuries. And again, the quarterback has to stay healthy, which is very important. You can't go to the backup and expect, like, the you know, the Eagles, because even if you look at the Eagles and you know, they struggled in the games that Foles played that were in the regular season. Ashley, who do we have on?
We've got Jet from Seattle.
Let's go to Jet. Jet, how are you?
Dr. John, how you doing today?
Doing well.
Hey, it's been a while since I've had a chance to talk to you.
I know, where you been?
Well, first, before anything else, when I last talked to you, Mrs. C had just gotten home mm-hmm. and was starting to get acclimated. How's
yeah.
she doing?
Doing better. Still got a lot of work to do, but she got up this morning and, you know, started doing some, you know, lifts on the chair and all that stuff. I mean, the lifts on the lift, so, you know, trying to do some push-ups and that. So get about 10 minutes of exercise, so that was good.
Outstanding. That's great to hear. I'm happy for you, John. Just keep it up.
Yep, it's trying to take care of her.
Time, man. Baby steps.
Yep.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. The other thing I'm glad to hear is Darrell Revis is no longer in the NFL.
You're bitter with your Hall of Fame cornerback?
Oh, yeah. I've been off the Revis bandwagon since 2010. Where I parted ways with him is this. It was the year that they did the Hard Knocks,
mm-hmm.
and they had those ridiculous negotiations at the Roscoe Diner. Well, you know, Revis held out every year he had a contract. He held out his rookie season as well.
Yeah.
And I don't begrudge these guys any nickel that they extra nickel they can get, because it is the ultimate meat market, and, man, they put their lives on the line literally every day. So I don't begrudge them any money that they can make. Where I got off the Revis bandwagon, I think it was 2010, was when they had the prolonged holdout, and he came back, I think, right before the end of training camp. And the season started, and he clearly wasn't in shape. And if you recall, that's the year that Randy Moss beat him to the post. And he came up lame with a hamstring injury. He clearly was not in shape, didn't come into camp in shape. And damn it, if you're going to get paid, you know, that kind of money and hold out for that kind of money, which was top dollar, not just at the position, but in the NFL at the time, you know, you better be in shape and you better be at the top of your game when you get there from day one. And he wasn't. And that was problem number one. And then the ridiculousness when he came back to the Jets after his stint with the Patriots. He was not in shape. He didn't want to be there. He was cashing a paycheck. He wouldn't tackle. He wouldn't do anything. He was slow. You know, he wasn't even playing press coverage anymore. I have no idea the legitimacy of his wrist issue, but he certainly never really had any speed, but his legs were gone. And he just wasn't, again, it didn't appear he was in shape, and either physically or mentally at that point. And he just literally stole money from the Jets those last 2 years. So I think his legacy in New York is mixed as far as I'm concerned.
Well, yeah, it's funny because did you hear Shannon Sharp this week? What Shannon said, he ripped him for coming into camp again this year out of shape. And he was saying there's no way that a 33-year-old cornerback should drop off like that and be in the point where you retire at that age, particularly a Hall of Fame caliber guy like himself.
Exactly, because it's like he just fell off a cliff. You know, I mean, it wasn't a slow degradation. It's just he just fell off a cliff. And I think, well, think about it. I mean, just look at all the money that he made. I mean, I can understand where he may have a motivation problem. But if you've got that motivation problem, don't steal the money. If you're not going to work for it and not going to earn it, don't take it. And that's literally what he did with the Jets the last 2 years. And, you know, the last year and a half just trying to hang on. You know, and I think that's a good point. I mean, if you're 33, 34 years old, you better get in the best shape that you can possibly get in, because those 22, 23-year-olds are going to be running circles around you, especially when you didn't have the legs, you know, the greatest of speed to begin with when you were their age.
But, I mean, I don't think I've seen too many cornerbacks drop off like that as quickly as he did. I mean, what was it, though? I don't know, week four, week five? I mean, they just kept on sending guys at him on long routes, and he just couldn't catch up. I mean, he was, like, 5 yards behind.
Yeah, it was brutal. But part of that problem, John, though, was the last few years he wasn't playing press coverage. Now, don't forget, he was a master at pressing them at the line of scrimmage. I mean, truly, nobody really did it better than him fighting at the line of scrimmage. That was what was so great about him and Cromartie at that point with Rhett Ryan, because they both had that same skill set, and they played Ryan's system to a T. But the last few years, he hasn't been able to play the press coverage. Again, blaming it on the wrist, but I contend it's that he was fat, he was slow, and he was out of shape. And that's why he was given that 10 to 15-yard cushion, because he knew that if he couldn't hold him up at the line, those guys were gone.
Well, here's another crazy part. You know, with all the holdouts and all the things that he did, because I thought he had great representation.
Oh,
they were,
God, yeah.
They were coming back. And 2 years ago, he fired him. And the guy made $124 million in 11 years and, you know, getting more dollars than just about any other position player other than a quarterback. And he ended up firing the agents.
I agree. And I couldn't agree more. That was just odd. But if you notice, that's pretty much when everything fell apart on him. Because that's when, I don't want to say his skills eroded, but I would contend his motivation eroded at that point, too. And I don't know what was going on internally, because wasn't he also getting a lot of advice from his uncle, the former Oiler? I can't come up with his name. Gilbert. Gilbert. And you're absolutely right, John. Nobody has played that system better than Darrell Revis and Darrell Revis's team. And that was just truly bizarre. You're absolutely right when they fired him. It made no sense. But it just kind of – and don't forget, wasn't that about the same time that he had that supposed incident that they never filed charges, weren't able to prove anything up on, and in Pittsburgh there at a bar or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
It was right about that same time, too. So I don't know if he had something funky going on with his life or there was some sort of life change or whatever, but it was all about that same time period. It was just out of character for what we had seen from him from the prior 10 years.
Yeah, it really is. Hey, Jet, got to run, but thank you for the phone call and welcome back home.
All right, take care, John, and keep plugging
okay.
at home. Good luck
Definitely.
To you.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up the phone lines. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Irish Mankey. Irish Mankey, how are you?
Hello, Mr. Clayton. Fantastic. And I heard the good news earlier about Mrs. Clayton doing well. Super duper duper.
Trying to get those exercises in every day.
Yeah. And what's that mean for you?
No exercise, no time.
Oh, Mr. Clayton. You're going to be your coach for her. You got to do those push-ups with her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know. The family that exercise together gets strong together.
Well, hopefully we're considered to be strong together.
Yes, well, you are in so many ways, Mr. Clayton. But we're just talking about physically, you
yes.
know.
Yes.
So, Mr. Clayton, it's getting closer.
It is.
And that Michigan-Notre Dame game is getting bigger, bigger, bigger.
Are you worried?
Of course.
It should be, yeah.
I'm worried that Notre Dame will embarrass the Michigan again.
Or be embarrassed themselves.
The last time they played.
Mm-hmm.
No, honestly. No, Michigan is a very strong, worthy opponent, Mr. Clayton. And they will certainly propel the Irish into a higher ranking than the Huskies, that's for sure.
Well, all I know is that last week you kept on bringing up Phil Steele and all these different ratings, and every rating that you brought up had Washington above Notre Dame.
Well, they make mistakes. People aren't perfect in their projections. I can tell you this, as far as recruiting goes, the Irish are smoking the Huskies.
Well, let's put it this way. They're catching up. They had a real good week this week. What did they land, about two or three or four four-star players?
I couldn't do. The Huskies?
Yes.
Oh, I don't. You know, I couldn't tell you. I do know that Rivals has the Irish ranked at six.
Mm-hmm.
247 Sports has them at seven. I also know that the Irish recruiting has the number one offensive line in the 2019 recruiting with their recruits. Scouts got the three players, 26, 27, and 28, in the position ranking for offensive linemen, which puts their class, the Irish class, number one, basically, in the recruiting.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it all falls apart if they lose to Michigan.
College, a university like Notre Dame, who just had two offensive linemen in the top 10 of the NFL draft, kind of gets kids' attention to, like, maybe Notre Dame can put me in the NFL and make me a top 10 offensive lineman pick.
Yeah.
Well. Isn't that amazing? They're going back to those big uglies because they're getting to understand that the line is so important. Wouldn't you say?
I would say the line would be very important. Agreed.
Yeah, well, yeah. Just ask the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a line. They're going to get. They got problems, Mr. Clayton.
No, they're fixing the problems.
They've
let's put it this way. They've had problems, but they're getting the problems taken care of.
They've been doing that for years now, Mr. Clayton.
What do you mean by doing it for years? I mean, did they not go to two Super Bowls? I guess they were pretty terrible back then.
Well,
let's put it this way. They've been in more big games than Notre Dame.
No, Mr. Clayton, let's not go that far. You can't. First of all, we're trying to compare apples and oranges.
Right.
Which is, you know, NFL is NFL. But as far as if you want to talk about impact of a program, either in the NFL or in college football, the Irish smoke the Hawks. You talk about program. You know, I'm talking historically.
Let's put it this way: how many national championships since 2010? How many national championships to equal the Super Bowls has Notre Dame won?
None.
Okay, there you go. So they're smoking. They're smoking the Seahawks. Give me a break.
We're talking some small amount of time, a sliver of time here. We're talking about impact of a program or a sports team like the Hawks.
Would a championship have impact? There's been more championships of late for the Seahawks than there have been Notre Dame, which had zero.
I see you're holding on to a thin argument, Mr. Clayton, and that's not going to get you to salvation, you know.
Well, that's true, but then it's not going to get you a championship either.
Oh, let's not go so far, you know. I wouldn't be surprised to see the Irish win a championship before the Seahawks go back to the Super Bowl, Mr. Clayton.
This has to be after Nick Saban retires, correct?
Well, no, actually.
Because I don't care. I mean, even Washington, they're going to have a hard time beating Alabama.
Actually, Mr. Clayton, the big dog coming out of the SEC now is Georgia.
Okay.
They're on fire right now, Mr. Clayton. They're leading the recruiting services, number one. Last year alone, they had like five-star players, which they're on fire.
Is this a Georgia team that allowed what could be the first pick in the 2020 draft to come to University of Washington?
Mr. Clayton? Yes. He left because he realized he didn't stand up to the talent that was coming into Georgia.
He was more talented than any quarterback that's come in there in the last several years.
Well,
you watch that next year. Got to run.
Mr. Clayton, go Irish!
Thank you. Thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Benjamin. Hey, Benjamin.
Hey, how are you doing, Professor?
Doing well.
Well, I send a greeting to your lovely wife.
Well, thank you.
And we wish you a speedy recovery. Anyway, I was listening, and some fella called, and he was complaining about the wish thing about the Seahawks. And,
right.
I was a little, I shouldn't say I was upset, but I was like, something that hasn't occurred yet has to be an if, you know, because you have to use the database to project things.
Right.
The only word you can use is if they did this right, they're gonna be 8-8 or 9 or 10 win team.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy was just trying to shut you down on that. I was listening to that, and I was very disappointed with him.
But that's okay. I mean, hey, everybody can have the opinion. It's like we don't have to agree on everything. But, you know, the thing that I look at is that, you know, it's not as if they're all of a sudden in the middle of the day just changing completely. You know, you have a seven game, half a season where you can start to say, OK, I can see where this is. And now we need to find a way to get younger and improve upon it. And, you know, maybe they didn't do the perfect job, but they did, I think, enough jobs that they could be better than where they were, and so that, yeah, and where they finished the season.
Yeah, if they tighten up a couple of areas, they'll be very good. Mm-hmm. That's all you could say. If they did. Also, I have another question. If Earl Thomas doesn't get traded, and he comes in and he doesn't want to play well, can they put him on the? Could they have somebody else play and have him on the bench?
They could, sure. It would have major consequences, I think, internally, but they could do that. I mean, see, the one thing that this Earl Thomas's holdout will allow to happen to see where Delano Hill, Tedrick Thompson are as far as being able to play, and if they can come in there and play, it, you know, shows like, okay, they may be better to have Earl Thomas available because he's such a good player, and he can, and again, he's now playing for a contract for next year, so but it'll be with another team. It'll get the third round compensatory pick in 2020, so you know, they may be better served just to keep him unless they get that right deal. If it becomes a distraction, then you just, you know, trade him over to another team. But no, they could take the tack that if he's not into it, then he's not on the field.
Yeah, but my hope is if he's getting traded, he shouldn't be given what he wants by sending him to Dallas, though. Then he wins.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, thank you, and you have a good day, sir.
Hey, Benjamin, thank you very much. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Darren in Bothell. Hey, Darren.
Yeah, hi, John. First off, I want to say all of us here, my son is a 9-year-old cancer fighter, and we want to wish your wife.
Oh, thanks. And remember, she has MS, so she's not fighting cancer
but
or anything.
Yeah,
like
we're praying for her.
Just appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Yeah, just wanted to find out, Iwakuma, haven't heard anything, you know, any latest update on him?
Nothing really. I mean, no progress. It still seems like he's got a long way to go. And I know that they have some progress on Erasmo Ramirez. I think he had two innings on a rehab assignment and didn't do too bad. So he's much closer right now than Iwakuma. But no timetable on when if he can be available at all.
Thank you. Yeah, just wanted to find that out. I asked Jim Moore that question earlier, and he kind of run me off the wrong way, but God bless. Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you, Darren. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. That is going to be the interesting thing, and Ashley Cox is running the board today as far as, you know, what they do to get those extra pitching innings, because, you know, I know that James Paxton's innings are getting up there, and same thing for Marco Gonzalez, and so, you know, they're trying to trade for a relief pitcher, a starting pitcher, but, you know, Ramirez could be one that can kind of fill some of the void.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there also could be an option of a long reliever. We haven't even kind of discussed that lately. And a starter like Erasmo Ramirez could just move to the bullpen and be a long reliever. And so you give our starting rotation a couple less innings, but they're still effective at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, those are kind of the pieces right now that, you know, Jerry DePoto's got to try to figure out. And, you know, don't you kind of get the shift right now that there's even a little bit more of a concerted effort to find a center fielder?
Yeah, which actually kind of surprised me, not going to lie, but I am a big fan of who's playing in our outfield right now, even with those four guys. As you know, I'm all about the hustle and the heart, yeah. And they all show that. So the fact that they are trying to find a center fielder possibly was shocking, but it also doesn't surprise me because DePoto is just trying to make this the best team possible. So if he's going to make a trade, he's going to make a trade.
Yeah, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. You know, and I'm happy that you know, the trades are already starting because they're taking shape, and, you know, they all make sense. I mean, you know, Manny Machado going over to the Dodgers, big move. And then, of course, Brad hand going over to Cleveland. So it's kind of fun to see, you know, these moves being done. And now you figure, hey, if all these trades are happening right now, DePoto's got to be in the mix of getting something done rather sooner than later. I mean, I thought that, you know, he hit gold when he was able to get Alex Colome because they were having problems in the eighth inning. And even though he hasn't been great, you know, he's starting to settle things out and being more consistent. And then nobody's been better than Edwin Diaz. I mean, I still contend that you can make the argument he's the MVP of this team. 37 saves. I mean, what, he's had, you know, a lead in like 44 of the games that he's come in, and he's not lost those. I mean, you know, I know he's lost a couple, blown a couple saves, but in a close game, he's been money. And, you know, pitched and didn't do well in the All-Star game. But again, that doesn't count against the Mariners, and they need him to continue to be able to pitch the way he has as one of the best, if not the best, reliever in baseball. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Back on the Seahawk front, again, going back to that theme about the defense. And again, you know, where everybody kind of is jumping off the cliff a little bit as far as, you know, oh boy, the dramatic change of losing five Pro Bowl guys on defense. Understand it's now kind of after the seven games of last year, a net loss of two because, you know, Michael Bennett, of course, being one and Sheldon Richardson being another. And so they are less talented on the defensive line, but they're going to be a little bit younger, and we'll see if they're going to be a little bit better. Still think they need to bring in a veteran pass rusher, maybe, you know, somebody like an Elvis Dumervil or a Connor Barwin, somebody like that, just as an insurance policy in case of injury. And they might still need to continue to look for a linebacker just for depth purposes in case of injury. But overall, I still think that the defense has a chance not to be as dominant as some of the past defenses, but to be a little bit better than what they finished, and they finished reasonably strong against very good teams. So that, I think, is going to be the big challenge for, you know, John Snyder and Pete Carroll. Because let's go to Scott from Redmond. Hey, Scott.
Good morning, John. It's been a while.
I know. How you been?
Oh, always good. Always good. You know, I keep listening to all the stuff, and I'm a big Husky fan, and I can't wait till September 1st. That sets the tone for a national championship try. I mean, yes, you can lose early. I mean, if we stay close, I mean, basically, I think Auburn's, that's a home game when we go down there. But I read an article in the paper that we might have five guys on that defensive backfield right now that could be playing in the NFL. In our secondary.
Yeah, it's funny because, I mean, different coaches and different evaluators, you know, seem to have just great eyes for certain things. Like, for example, you know, the Steelers have a great eye for wide receivers. You can see that Pete Carroll and John Snyder have a great eye for defensive backs. And same thing for Chris Peterson. I mean, Peterson just seems to be, you know, like Pete Carroll in getting the type of corners that really fit the system. And then they continue to grow so that you see, you know, good player after good player come in and pro after pro come in.
Well, I agree with that, but it still takes coaching. This is the funny part. This is how selfish Washington is. Coach K, the defense coordinator, they don't want to lose Lake. He knows that, so he steps back to give more responsibility to Jimmy Lake, which they know they're going to lose. It's just a matter of time. But he's the major recruiter getting these guys here, and that's where it's kind of cool to see teams, coaches put other coaches in front of themselves. A lot of coaches have egos, and this Coach K, you know, he says, hey, I know my job, I know what I'm doing. And he's, you know, they turn over the play calling, which is, I think this is why Peterson has great success, because people buy in. You know what I mean? They buy in.
Nope, and that's
from all levels.
Yeah, and they got good reason, and that's why in many cases some people think if they can get past Auburn, they can get into that Final Four for, what, two times in 3 years, and a roster that just keep getting better. I mean, I still think one of the keys is that they kept the offensive line together, and Myles Garrett is also coming back in the year that I thought he was going to turn pro.
Myles Gaskin,
sorry about that, yeah.
Yeah, Garrett, I think he's a DN for Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, you're right. But no, great. But, no, I think it's going to be a fun season. Just that pressure is going to be on that Auburn game. Boy, if they can get through that, they're in great shape. Hey,
well,
thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Jacob.
If they're going to lose by like 2 points, you know, if they're in it to win it, you know, just don't get blown out.
Right.
That's the whole thing.
Hey, thank you for the phone call. Let's go to Jacob in Kennewick. Hey, Jacob.
Hey, Professor. How's it going?
Going good.
Hey, what's like an overall grade you'd give us for our off season and going into this new season?
Probably a B minus, something like that. Where certainly the losses outnumber the gains, but again, this is just what happens. I mean, once you start to get players that they get into their eighth year, get into their third contracts, very few teams are able to keep that group together. I mean, I went through, and when you think about what there's only, and this is a league-wide thing, 11 position players from 2000 and up who have been with the same team since 2009 and before that, up to 2010. And now you're starting to sort through the 2010 players, and there's only like 24 position players that are able to stay on the team. So if you have a great group, it's almost impossible because of the cap and quarterback salaries and everything else to keep them all. They just kind of all go at some point. And so you're usually left with one per position. And, it's hard to maintain that. You can't maintain an offensive line when they get into their 30s. The performance goes down. So it's just the reality. And this is this reset that was probably due. Some may say they should have done that last year. I'd say, no, you try to squeeze out one more chance to win and then start to go through the reset.
Yeah. I had a couple other questions.
Yeah,
Earl Thomas, how big do you think it is to keep him or let him go right now? I just kind of thought it'd be great to have him in there teaching all the new guys and just have a player like that. Do you think it's detrimental to the team if we end up losing him or trading him this year?
Yeah, I mean, I think what it comes down to is you just wait it out. And what I mean by waiting it out is that you try to take the tack that it's like, okay, if you get the right offer, then you move him. If not, you have his control, and also you still have his ability to play. If he's going to be a problem, then you have to start just dumping him. But I think you just kind of wait and see when he comes in. But still, I think you keep the asset until it becomes something that you just can't handle anymore. And right now, you can handle it because he's not in camp. Hey, thank you for the phone call. Coming up next, talking Mariners with Aaron Goldsmith. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.